Hello and welcome to Accent of Women, a show by and about women from diverse cultures and languages right across the world. I'm Marissa Spazzaro and I will be with you for the next half hour. On the show today, we will be acknowledging International Day of People with Disability. We will be bringing you interviews and a wonderful yarn with First Nations advocates June Reamer and Kelly Cox. I have always enjoyed talking to them, and we will bring you stories and dialogue about disability and First Nations commentary. We will be linking solidarity and leadership and covering a lot of issues in regards to solidarity between disabled people. Hello, June and Kelly, welcome.
Good morning. How are you?
Morning.
Okay. It's lovely to have you both. Now, let's start. I think it would be really important for you to begin, Kelly, by just telling us what land you're from and giving a little bit of an introduction, and then June, you can follow on from Kelly.
Yes.
Okay, sure. Yeah, so my name's Kelly and I grew up down on Biripi country and have some links to Warramai, and I'm living in the northern New South Wales in the Bunchalong Nation at the moment. Which I feel very privileged to be here and living here, and yeah. My background is, so I'm a disabled woman who uses a powered wheelchair user, and I've been involved in the advocacy and activism space around human rights and specifically disability for maybe 15 years, about a little bit longer than I've known her. And I currently hold a few advisory roles for, I sit on the Australian Disability Council advisory group for the federal government, and some other roles for state government and the National Disability Insurance Agency. Lots of other little bits and bobs, but that's me probably in a nutshell.
Beautiful, beautiful. And June, what about you?
Yeah, thank you, Kelly. I think that solidarity in itself, that the sisterhood across the sector, we all link constantly with each other and prop each other up, and I think that's really important. But my name's June Reamer. I'm a Bengia woman from the mid-north coast of New South Wales. So I come from a long line of strong matriarchs. My grandmother was Gladys Foley. So the Foley name is known for activism, not so much in the disability space, but that's the conversation we need to, put more focus on when we're talking about activism across the spaces. So I've always been an advocate from a young age, but I've worked in the sector now for about 30 years. And I, like Kelly, sit on a lot of advisory boards on behalf of, our mob living with disability. The new one that I'm quite excited about, the First Nations Women's Justice Institute, which I'm on the advisory council for that. So we're building the framework, what would this institute look like? And that's led by June Oscar, the former Social Justice Commission for the Human Rights Commission. So thanks for listening today.
Fantastic. So, look, I also identify with a disability. I have a vision impairment and I'm a Braille user. And I think that this show may be a little bit different to, the shows that are aired on 3CR, given that this is about people with disability and looking at lived experience as well. And I do come to the show with lived experience as well. And I think we all do, don't we? And in terms of the First Nations, you too come with lived experience too. And that's important.
Definitely. Yeah. So, across the sector, we need to acknowledge more that the social anxiety that, First Nations people, but more importantly, First Nations women suffer as, from generational trauma. It needs to be acknowledged better and understood, that why things are happening in our society and how we can better support our First Nations women living with disability.
Absolutely. And I think as well, Jen, like you hinted on before, supporting each other. When we look at barriers people face and the intersectional way you know, that impacts if you've got a disability and you're First Nations and you're a woman, things really certainly start to pile up. And one of the ways through that is, you know, solidarity and support for each other and the leadership roles and the leadership things that we can do to support each other, you know, so we're doing it together.
Absolutely. And how do you think that violence or state violence plays a role in hampering solidarity with people with disability and also First Nations?
So I think... So, you know, in regards to, you know, the violence we hear about or don't hear about, in particular for our First Nations women with disability, you know, it has a lot to be said, you know, the generational trauma, but also... you know, the colonial imposition that, you know, our people found themselves in, that, you know, there was violence, you know, imposed on our groups, and it's like a learnt experience. So we need to now, you know, change the way we think about things, you know, speak up and support each other and understand that violence is not the answer. You know, we come from a society, you know, in Australia here where we talk about fair go for all and equality, but we don't see that equality, and we need to start talking about, you know, the violence and bullying. So it's about educating and having this narrative and not being ashamed to, you know, call it out when you see it.
So let's talk about allies, and let's talk about how it's really important to have proper allies. What is a good ally?
I think an ally is somebody who, you know, firstly they need to acknowledge, I guess, the privilege that they have. And sometimes that can be quite difficult. If you're, you know, a disabled man, for instance, you might not feel very privileged, but you certainly hold some privilege over, you know, people who, you know, are not men, people who, you know, are First Nations or cold or come from other, you know, backgrounds that can otherwise be marginalised. So I think, you know, being aware of whatever level of privilege you have, I know that I have privileges that other people don't have, and I'm always trying to be aware of that, and making space for people who, you know, who don't have the voice that you might have access to easily, or, you know, who don't hold those privileges.
It's pretty important, isn't it? I mean, let's be honest here. I mean, I'm here to provide a safe environment for women with disabilities to speak out on this show, and I'm just getting the sense here that it's not easy, and it's really important that we're able to speak our truth.
Absolutely, I think, you know, the comment about state violence earlier, and you know, I absolutely agree with everything June said, and I think in addition to that, you know, when we look at policies and government policies, and we talk about state violence, like it's a, you know, we see a lot of that there. So you look at something like the NDIS, where we go, it absolutely is not working for First Nations communities. It doesn't work very well for women, that women are hugely underrepresented in the NDIS. When we put those, you know, two together, the impact for First Nations women with disabilities becomes almost catastrophic. So making sure that, you know, First Nations women with a disability have seats at all the tables that inform all of the policy, not just the First Nations policy, but, you know, everywhere, to limit, you know, the impact of that as much as possible, and to strengthen it and to make sure that, you know, it absolutely, you know, is meeting people's needs.
And I think, you know, following on from the theme on United Nations Day of People with Disability, we don't see that inclusiveness. We don't amplify those voices. And I think, you know, for First Nations women, particularly those living with disability, we're tired of non-Aboriginal people talking on our behalf. You know, I've watched a few lately on TV, and, you know, we had non-Aboriginal people talking about, well, there was always violence in Aboriginal communities because I read it somewhere. No, that's true, you know, and we need to, you know, get out And I put it back on, you know, medium to get out into the communities, get out into our rural and remote areas and speak to our women and talk about, and particularly our world, and understand, you know, what our culture was. You know, we can't have other people talking on behalf of our culture constantly. And I think this is where the narrative needs to change. The education needs to start in schools, that everyone's included. You know, as a civil society, which we talk about, you know, Australia being a privileged society, but it's only privileged for those who have the biggest voices. International, United Nations recognises as the International Day of People with Disability to amplify their voices and understand that, you know, disability is part of the experience for many. You know, we need to understand, you know, and educate ourselves about, you know, culture can be a barrier, can be a disability in some areas, but, you know, for many in our society.
You're tuned to Accent of Women, produced in the studios of 3CR in Fitzroy, Victoria, and broadcast nationally on the Community Radio Network. Today we're speaking to Kelly Cox and June Reamer, First Nations advocates. Let's return now to a conversation for International Day of Disability.
I think just International Day of People with Disability is in December, and we're talking about solidarity. The theme for International Day of People with Disability this year is around leadership, and leadership by disabled people. And I think that, you know, it all is a fitting theme, and you know, June talking about, you know, non-First Nations people not talking on behalf of MOV, and I would say as well for disability, you know, we need disabled people speaking to the experiences of disabled people, and First Nations people with a disability talking to those experiences, and, you know, people who belong to the queer community. So, you know, when we look at, you know, leadership and people in leadership roles and who they really are, that they're often not representative, you know, of the communities that they're representing. So I think that, you know, that thing around solidarity and those people really looking at who's around them and who's in those leadership roles, and like I said earlier, making space, you know, make sure that you've got everyone's voice at the table, and if they're not there, that you're creating systems and processes that enable those people to come in and find their voice and take up that space.
Absolutely. And in fact, Kelly and June, one of the things that is really central here and really important is the way that people with disability are criminalised by the criminal injustice system. And I've done a lot of interviews with the police and the incarceration as well of First Nations people and people with disability. Can you comment on that?
Yeah, do you want to go first, Jim?
No, you're right, Kelly.
Go on.
I was going to talk to you that there was some research done, I think it was finished last year or early this year, and it was around the social determinants to justice. And so it looked at that, you know, what are the factors that make somebody more likely to enter into the justice system and to engage with it. And it absolutely was, you know, First Nations, disability, if you're in out-of-home care, poverty. So a lot of things that overlap where you look at, you know, some of the people that live in our communities that you go, well, you know, this is, you know, this has such a big impact because of all the, you know, boxes that different people tick because of their life circumstances and because they're not supported via, you know, communities, you know, wider communities or governments and local governments to get out of those situations. It has such a huge impact.
Indeed. Yep. Go on, June.
I'll stay on that topic. You know, it's not helpful again. As I said earlier, when we've got non-Aboriginal people, you know, talking that they understand, you know, people living with differences don't understand what those differences may look like, and I'm talking about disability, you know, saying it's a behavioural issue. You know, it's not when that narrative is put out across mediums, and so, you know, our children or our, you know, young adults are labelled once again with naughty child syndrome when actually, you know, it's a disability of some form, you know, undiagnosed generally because, you know, the poverty across that or the lack of health services or, you know, professionals to diagnose these disabilities, you know, within our children at early age. We haven't got enough early intervention happening to mitigate, you know, behavioural issues that may generate from having disability.
Yeah. So, I don't think people know that, June, that it's not easy to get a diagnosis.
Yes.
And it costs a lot of money. You need to be able to access multiple specialists often. And it's just not common knowledge amongst people outside of, you know, spaces that deal with that from a day-to-day thing. But often people who don't have that information have the most opinion around, you know, people negative often, like you're saying.
Correct. And what's been found, you know, for a lot of research, you know, Autism Australia have done a lot of work around this too, in particular. It's only when, you know, our children start accessing outside of their communities, whether it's the school environment or other environments, that disability is acknowledged. Because while they're living and being raised within communities, we don't really see the difference. You know, Aboriginal communities are accepting of everyone, and we talk about, you know, just looking after each other because of, you know, the disadvantage of possibly living, you know, in a remote area, so no access to transport, no access to health or educational needs. So it's only when they start entering other areas within their life that these barriers start popping up and behaving. Start occurring a lot of the time, and again, getting back to it's very misunderstood. So, you know, we need better educational support, better education within those that are affecting, you know, with our children or our women with disability to understand and have their needs met better. And that's you know, getting back to the theme of the, you know, International Day with disability. How do we, you know, generate a sustainable future for all people within our society? And again, it goes back to educating. We need better education. We need, you know, straight away in the school system. You know, we need, you know, Braille being available for everyone, not an extra, but it's just available within the education system. So our children that may be here can enter that school system and they're not seen as different. The same as, you know, all our children should be learning Auslan. You know, all the classrooms should be hearing accessible. So, you know, that those with hearing impairments can, you know, easy access the classroom through, you know, technology that allows them to, you know, hear much better within the classroom, or vision impairment. So I sit on a board where we support First Nations children, and we're actually buying glasses at the moment for a lot of these kids in areas because the health doesn't provide.
Exactly.
You know, or the waiting list is 18 months. So if you've got a child at school that can't see the blackboard or can't see the books, and they've got to wait 18 months to get a set of glasses, you know, then that child ends up with a learning disability because he's fallen behind.
Yeah.
So
that
acknowledgement that there's repercussions of not being inclusive or having a sustainable society that everyone can access whatever needs, you know, they may need.
Absolutely. And in fact, bringing lived experience to what I'm about to say, I come from a migrant background, non-English speaking Italian, and also having to learn Braille as well. And in high school, there was very little Braille, and I certainly right. couldn't see the blackboard. So it was really hard.
Yeah. So, you know, this is about, you know, why, you know, we have these International Days of Disability or International Day of People, Indigenous people, many other groups to, you know, amplify the voices, make, you know, take away that invisible, you know, barrier that, you know, our people with disability, you know, as soon as they step out the front door, there's a barrier to them being included in society, whether it's appropriate footpaths or whether, you know, Braille is accessible on, you know, doors or elevators or wherever they may be going to access.
Absolutely.
I agree, Jean. And I think on the education thing, like when you look at, you know, lack of access and lack of disability supports in the education centre, and then, you know, it often not being culturally safe as well, it's no wonder that the kids disengage from it.
Exactly.
You know, their culture's not respected and, you know, practiced in the school. They can't see the blackboard or hear or, you know, whatever the access need is. And, you know, and then we expect them to sit there and be fully engaged with it when it's just not possible.
Kelly and June, we are nearing the end of our time together. Are there any final comments that either of you want to make?
I think for me, it's just about, you know, we need to start again, a starting point, you know, as a society. You know, we've gone through a lot of things in the last years with COVID and that, but I find society quite angry at the moment. And it's like we need to regroup, recharge and think about what we're doing. And, you know, I find sad all the bullying issues that are happening, you know, within our environment. So I think I would just like to say that people need to think before they talk, you know, and understand that, you know, we all walk differently on this earth, but that's okay.
Exactly.
And so, you know, we need to just take care of each other better, I guess.
What about you, Kelly?
I might go back to the theme of solidarity and leadership and ask, okay, people who are in leadership roles to, as I said before, have you know, examine their own privileges, look at the leaders who are around them, and I consider that someone in a leadership role and someone who's a leader to often be very different things. When I think about who's, you know, taught me over the years, it often hasn't been person in a leadership role, the leaders are very different people who may not otherwise get that acknowledgement. So I think, you know, the way to practice solidarity is to look around us, who are the leaders around us, and they're not necessarily going to be the people in the leadership roles.
Let's extend that a little bit more, because I mean, I know it's we're reaching conclusion, but there's still a little bit of time left. Let's talk about leadership and what that means and some of the ableism or even racism that could happen with First Nations.
Yeah, for sure. And I would, and just to, I guess, to expand on the difference between a leader and someone in a leadership role, someone like Donald Trump is in a leadership role. We could mention some former Australian Prime Ministers who have been in leadership roles, and we would probably all go, those people are not leaders. Or they're not who we would consider to be leaders. So that's the kind of difference that I'm talking about. A leader, to me, is somebody who, you know, teaches me, whether on purpose or just, you know, via my engagement with them, that, you know, they're people who live lives that, you know, the people that inspire me, I guess, to either to do better or want me to be around them or things like that, they're very often not the people in leadership roles.
And I think when we're talking about disability, you know, again, it's amplifying and changing the narrative of who are the leaders in our community in regards to disability. And they may not all have the pieces of paper and been educated in, you know, as we would see, you know, a Westminster system, but the knowledge holders in community are the leaders for me, you know, and we need to acknowledge that racism that was in Australia previously. So a lot of our leaders didn't have the opportunity to be formally educated, but that doesn't mean they're not a leader in that community. So it's opening spaces and allowing all voices to be heard and particularly, you know, our women living with disability.
Indeed, and I think there's quite a lot of people left out of policy, or minority groups left out of policy, isn't it, marginalised communities?
Oh, 100%. You know, like, you know, we're talking, you know, whether it's First Nations, called communities, you know, emerging communities that are coming into Australia, we don't hear that voice. And particularly I would like to acknowledge, you know, those women that are coming from communities where women don't have a voice at all. So, you know, it's we need to do better, what I'm trying to say, for all women, in particular, you know, for those living with disability.
June and Kelly, thank you so much for coming onto the program. It has been really amazing having you both, really and truly.
Thanks, Marissa. It's always good to come and have a chat.
And that was a very, very special interview with June, Rima and Kelly Cox, and speaking about International Day of Disability. And they were First Nations advocates giving us very special coverage on disability and First Nations. And that's all we've got time for today. Accent of Women is produced in the Melbourne studios of Community Radio 3CR with the financial assistance of the Community Broadcasting Foundation. The show is distributed nationally via the Community Radio Network, with special thanks to the Community Broadcasting Association of Australia. Music for Accent of Women was written and produced by George Kanjiri. If you want to hear this show again or any of our previous programs, you can download the podcast from 3CR's website, 3cr.org.au. Go to the Accent of Women page and follow the links to this week's show. If you want to get in touch with the producers of the show, you can write to us at accentofwomen@gmail.com. You can also follow us on Twitter or like our page on Facebook. My name is Marissa Spazzaro. Thanks for listening.